us come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for calling. I'm Bobby Elias, along with co-host Stefan Rudolph. We're having a great show of we again today. This is Let's Create a Better World. Our second theme is very strong. It's body, mind, spirit, and a big strong thing on aging and all the solutions for a better world and all the solutions and newest information on health and aging. All right, we've got a great show today. I have a couple announcements to make first, but our guest will be Peter Pittard. Our co-host, Stefan Rudolph, will be interviewing him quite a bit today. He's going to talk about pain management, about the power of the mind, happiness, and a number of things that can help you live a better life. We're concerned with you, our listeners. All right. First of all, the next week, we'll have Burton Goldberg on. He's been one of the most popular guests we've ever had. He is a pioneer in health, in teaching people holistic health, alternative health. He's done in a lot of ways. This man's been active for many, many years. He's in 90 years old and going strong. Burton is very, very well known in health circles for all of his years. Then the following week, which will be November the 7th, on a Monday, again, we're on every Monday at 4 p.m. We'll have Ellie Lax to talk about the love that we can get from animals, her animal location, where she takes in animals that nobody else wants. And she and I, and possibly one other co-host, will be talking with her about solutions for the world problems, what's going on around the world, and what we can do about it. We have some great stuff for you on that show. All right, so here's the phone number to call, and keep this number handy for if you can't get to a computer or laptop and you want to hear the show on your phone. Call this number, area 701-801-3362. Now, another announcement here. A great, great friend of ours, a gentleman named Tom Hayden, died at age 76. Tom Hayden was anti-war activist in the Vietnam War. He was a writer. He was in the California legislature, going back to SDS. He died last night, Sunday night, at UCLA Medical Center in Santa Monica. A great, great man. Was married to Jane Fonda for a while, and he was phenomenal. Did a lot of writing. He was on a lot of radio shows. He was a real, real, true activist. So our condolences to him and his family. All right, Stefan, you want to go ahead and start introducing our guests and get the show rolling? Go right ahead.
Yeah, Bobby, great to be with you again here, and always great to be creating a better world for all our listeners out there. And we have an awesome guest here. Peter Pittard has gone through a lot in his life and is now helping people out there with convergence healing, it's called. And he had suffered a near-death experience and was faced with the greatest challenges in life and living with severe physical and emotional and spiritual pain. And he was also a former dancer, but soon he discovered that the anger and frustration he felt because of his injuries were only keeping him in pain. And after that, he learned how to overcome the pain and teach others about this. So I'd like to introduce Peter. Peter Pittard, are you here? Let's see, he's probably having some areas to call in here, so I wanted to maybe, right before he gets on here, he's coming on in a few minutes. He's a very busy doctor, too. I wanted to also talk about his information, too. He's a celebrated author and healer and helps thousands of people globally to live a life of full potential while integrating the lessons of pain into balanced living. So it's exciting to have him on because I've gone through the same thing in my life with overcoming epilepsy. As you know, Bobby, we talked about this before, really the holistic healing method that we have, and Peter's going to be going over this information, and he can tell us more about how he helps people, because he has actually healed himself of everything, because his body was racked in pain, he was telling me. He had a mind trapped in fear, and he had mentioned his spirit had been broken. So he's gone through a lot. He's just jumping on right now. So I appreciate your patience out there, because he's got a lot of patience in his office too, no pun intended. But when he jumps on, he'll be introducing himself here. He's also had extensive training in hypnotherapy and works with people like that, with thousands of people. It's helped him heal themselves, which I've gone through, the anxiety, the addiction, the pain that he works with. Is awesome to going to be able to hear more about him. And it's very applicable to our ship. Yes.
Yes, Devon. Yeah, yeah. He wanted to, when I spoke to him yesterday, he really said he pain management was a real key issue that he's working on. Yeah, so I'm sure you and I, he will be talking about that. But also, I want to let listeners know that you, Stefan Rudolph, our co-host here, doing most of the interviewing to Peter, that you are got into this, and you can tell your story a little bit whenever you'd like, either now or later, about how you were addicted to alcohol and how you overcame it, the power of thought.
Yeah, that would be along the same line. Peter, are you there?
Go ahead.
I'm here. Hey, guys.
Hey, Peter, how you doing? Another busy day at the office,
I'm
right?
I'm great. Pardon me?
Oh, another busy day at the office, right?
Another busy day at the office. Yeah, I just finished with the clients, and I'm squeezing you guys in between for my day.
I just gave an introduction to our listeners about how you're helping others and what you've been through. So, yeah, just introduce yourself. Tell us about your practice and what you're doing for people.
Oh, all right, cool. So, again, my name is Peter Bedard, and my story starts when this portion of my story starts when somebody decided to push my moped into the back of a semi truck. So I was driving along on the side of the road. Somebody came up behind me and pushed my back tires, and my bike and I flew into a semi truck, and I jumped out of my body as my body impacted the truck, and I died. I went to the other side. It's a whole other story, but I came back and my body was racked with pain. I finally jumped back into my body. I shattered left knee. I split my right wrist open. I cracked 5 vertebrae, and I had undiagnosed brain damage. I had to learn how to walk again. I had chronic pain for years and years and years, a couple decades, and that pain was emotional, physical, and spiritual, and it manifested as learning how to walk again and having a difficult time walking as arthritis and fibromyalgia, and I had bronchitis and sciatica, constant sciatica. I had severe anxiety and depression. My hemoglobin was splitting and shutting down my organs. My white blood cells were attacking my red blood cells. All different kinds of things, on and on and on the list goes. And I had to learn how to heal myself of all of that pain, the pain of losing a career, because I perceived myself at the time as a dancer. And I was very blessed to have scholarships in dancing schools. And I really fit in and found my voice in that experience. So there was the pain of losing my life purpose and how I knew how to exist in the world. There was a pain in my physical body, and there was a pain in my thoughts where I was constantly wondering if I was ever going to be able to survive and get through life, and that constant chanting in my head that I wasn't worthy, I was no good, and that who I was just didn't matter. So I had to heal myself on all of those levels, and I created a process for healing myself that came to be known as Convergence Healing. I wrote a book on it. The book was published at the last week of December in 2015, and with Simon & Schuster. And the book's doing really well, and I have a practice in Los Angeles where I help people find their healing.
That's awesome, David. Peter, I love that. I mean, we have a lot in common, as I've gone through epilepsy and issues like that, and you with your accident as well. That just changes everything. One day you're a professional dancer, your life's going good, and you're riding your moped, you know, going somewhere, and next second you're in the hospital, right? You went through a near-death experience, too. And I would love to hear more on that by your awakening and how long it took overall, like the transition for you to start your healing. I've done the same thing, and I would just love to hear more on that. Did you start with meditation, or how did that work with you?
Well, so for me, this accident, I'm going to be 50 soon, and this accident when I was many years ago when I was 17. So the accident was something that happened at a time where the only thing that was really being offered that was sort of common knowledge in society was was drugs and surgery by the doctors, or there was this thing called acupuncture and this other thing called chiropractic. But it wasn't extremely common, and there weren't, these people weren't all over the place. And so, and I grew up with a Catholic father, an Episcopalian mother, and my dad was a Marine, and you did what you were told by the doctors. The doctors were in charge, and you didn't question their authority. And I did, and I didn't want to do the drugs and the surgery. I had my leg rebuilt because obviously it needed to be. It was, you know, little tiny pieces. So they had to glue and nail my leg back together. But after that, the only thing I was offered was continued surgeries or drugs, pharmaceuticals. And I didn't want to go that route. So for me, I was in pain for a couple decades. I finally started my healing was when somebody actually did recommend an acupuncturist to me. And I didn't know what acupuncture was. I knew they used needles and they put needles in you, and I knew I didn't like needles because I'd been in the hospital a lot and I had my enough of needles. I didn't understand that those are very different. So I went into the acupuncturist's office. I actually crawled into their office. I was in so much pain that I couldn't even crawl a baby on my front. I had to crawl on my backside, kind of like a crab, and I crawled upwards because I had such severe sciatica. And I crawled downstairs in my car. I have no idea how I drove because I barely see the dashboard. So all the way across town, the acupuncturist was referred to me out near the airport in the Torrance area. And I crawled down the street into their office because they worked from a home office and up two flights of stairs. And I actually walked out of that acupuncturist office. And that was sort of an awakening for me. I went, whoa, there is some to this holistic alternative therapy stuff. And from then on,
gentlemen, let me cut in here. This is Bobby Elias. Hey, Bobby. We're speaking with Peter Bethard, a healer, a gentleman has gone through a lot. He's going to talk about pain management today and the power of the thoughts and more. And Stefan Rudolph, our co-host, is interviewing him right now. I'm popping in. But I want to make sure that our listeners know that this is Let's Create a Better World. And stay tuned to the end. We have some announcements to make. Go right ahead, Stefan and Peter.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know,
Peter,
I love the title of your show because I was just saying, I love the title of the show because, you know, it's really what it's about. I think that that is why we're here. I think that's a directive for all of us on it to make the world a better place together. And I think that's an important message. Thanks.
Yeah, and your message with your book as well, Healing Pain with Energetic Love, I do really like that. And if we said that in the 80s, people would be like, you're crazy. You know, and they called them quacks, right, as far as chiropractors and everything that was going on then. And there was no other route to go except the, yeah, you know, take the pills and have the surgery. And that is great that you did that. Tell us about your book as well and what it's about and how it's going to help the readers.
So eventually I started looking at how I was healing. And in the 90s and the 2000s, they were making really great strides in treating cancer and HIV. And they created this drug cocktail. And I thought, whoa, that is kind of cool. All these different drugs are putting together, and they're helping people feel better or at least have longer life. This cocktail of drugs. Now, I'm not a big fan of pharmaceuticals, and I like how they sort of bandage things, but they really fix things. So I started thinking, well, what would be a holistic cocktail? What would be my own personal holistic cocktail? And I started to discover that, like I said in the beginning, I realized that I had been wounded in this accident, not only physically in my body, but in my thoughts and how I perceive myself and my broken heart. So I started to look at ways to heal, and I started creating my own holistic cocktail that was literally a therapy that treated each of those parts of me, whether it was my heart or whether it was my mind or whether it was my body. And I started to pick things. So let's say I started doing some deep rolling type of muscular skeletal work with a body worker. I would combine that with meditative practices, and then I would combine that with something maybe creative that supported my spirit. And so I found that when I did those things and I did them in conjunction with each other in the same day or time or even in through the same therapy, my healing accelerated. And this was what I started referring to as that convergence, that coming together. And so my practice became known as Convergence Healing, and that's why my book has that title. So it's really about coming together and creating your own recipe for healing. And it doesn't matter if you decide to do the allopathic method, that's fine. It's about connecting with the pain, talking to the pain, whether it's a tumor or whether it's an anxiety condition or it's obsessive compulsive type of issues or whatever it is, or even addiction. It's about talking to that pain and saying, okay, I'm no longer going to beat you up. You know, I worked in addiction rooms for years. And most people with addiction will talk to themselves highly abusively. They'll tell them they're stupid. Why can't you do this? Why can't you do that? You need to be this way or that way. This constant dialogue of abuse. And so one of the things I learned was we have to address the thinking patterns. Now, we also need to address the physical parts of the body. Say with addiction, nutrition is a big part of that. So if we address how they're thinking about themselves, we work on the addiction with nutritional elements. And then we also look at that broken heart, because most addiction is being driven by an anxiety experience. There's something that's underneath, something that says, I'm not good enough, some sort of trauma or abuse that is coming up and needing to be medicated. The person feels that pain. They don't know how to deal with it. And so they turn to something that's going to medicate it. And when you address it on all those levels and start asking the pain to lead its way instead of outside sources, it may be important to do a medical detox for that person. It may not be for another person. When you start talking to the pain and making it your best friend instead of an enemy, we actually are open to more solutions and we create the healing that we're looking for.
That is awesome, Peter. I love that. And to our listeners, again, it's Peter Bedard. It's Stefan Rudolph here on Let's Create a Better World with Bobby Elias as well. And we're talking to Peter about really holistically overcoming pain and obstacles like this. I did the exact same thing, so I can really relate. And I love your book. I'm going to get that, because this is what you're doing for people, is acknowledging it and not putting it down, especially what you said about alcohol or addiction. I went through AA many times. Been sober 4 years, but the way I did that is exactly what you're saying, is to acknowledge it and say, I started saying thank you, I have this, and stopped calling myself an alcoholic, stopped ripping on myself, stopped being negative, right? Is that how you help people?
Yeah, your thinking is one-third of that equation. If you keep perceiving, and this is my beef with several different things, when my beef is that in AA, they're always saying, oh, I'm an alcoholic. Well, no, you're not. You were at that moment in time. Now let's redefine your thinking. And what if you started perceiving yourself differently? And what if you started thinking of yourself differently? Would you still be an alcoholic? So that's when I have to go through. And you, again, you have to deal with it on all levels. You have to find that spiritual component, and you have to find that physical component. And the physical part is a lot of AA actually does have a spiritual element to it if people practice it or look for it. But there's a physical component with most alcoholics that they're missing. And they're either the physical component of sugars and being addicted to sugars, which often is why people start smoking, because that is a commonality between alcohol and cigarettes and other like destructive foods. So, you know, changing their nutritional pattern, but also physically having changes in their body, where they need to get massages and things that are going to pull the toxins out, as well as they're going to strengthen their body and their mind. And we know that exercise is super important, and yet most programs don't offer any kind of physical component to sobriety. We're missing that one.
Awesome. And that's how you help people with the physical part, is that correct?
Well, my own personal studies are, we'll talk to it again. I ask people to visualize, imagine, think about the pain itself, stepping out of their body and taking on a shape. So if you were making a movie or a cartoon or drawing a picture, what would the shape of your pain be? As it steps out of you, would it be a cloud, a tornado? Would it be an empty hole? Would it be a tree? Would it be you as a younger person? What would the image of your pain be if it were to step out of you and you were able to actually have a conversation with it? and then we name it, because oftentimes these parts, although they feel, they'll feel huge, they'll feel overwhelming, like alcohol or pain or anxiety or any of those types of things, they feel overwhelming, but the reality of it is that they're just a small part of us. And so we then name it, because that asserts our position of being the authority, of being in charge, of being the captain of our own ship. And so when we step out and we actually let the pain take on a shape and a form, we give it a name, our brains have the ability to comprehend it better. Instead of being this big, giant, overwhelming thing, suddenly it has a name, a gender, a shape, and a form, and now we can connect with it and talk to it. Then I literally ask it three questions. You know, one of my favorite poets is Rumi. And Rumi says, the cure for the pain is in the pain, which means you can't medicate it, you can't run away from it anymore. And mm-hmm. So if you're going to really stop and get the cure for the pain in the pain itself, then you need to talk to it. And we're always telling the pain what we think it needs to do. It's kind of like a 17-year-old rebel who got in trouble. And they're sitting in the principal's office, and everybody's wagging their finger at that kid, you know, the 17-year-old Bobby. And everybody's saying, Bobby, you should do this, you should do that, right? And the principal, the teachers, the friends, the family members, the authority figures, the doctors, and they're all telling Bobby what to do. But nobody stops to bother to ask Bobby how Bobby wants to fix the problem. What does Bobby need in order to make things right or to feel better? And so we ask the pain those questions. What do you need, pain? What do you need me to do physically? What do you need me to do in my thoughts and the way I've been thinking about you, my perception? And what do you need me to do on a spiritual level in order to create healing for us?
Peter, this is Bobby. This is Bobby Elias. Not the same Bobby you were talking about. No.
Bobby. I was just using you as a
That's okay. Metaphor. No problem. I like your analogy. But, yeah, you're a pain management specialist, it seems, and you're also into thoughts, but I'm sure our co-host is on interviewing you mostly. That's Stefan Rudolph. He's going to carry this conversation further, but I'm so glad we have you on, and you have a lot of good healing methods for pain management. And you know, Peter, we have a lot of people that are in pain listening to this show. Why? Because we have a lot of people that are over 50 years old. And because this station's been around, Gary Null has had radio work for 40 years, and he has a lot of following of people that are older and sick, that are getting sick. And this is what we do on this station and this show. We try to heal people and get people like yourself on. So I can't thank you enough for being with us. But go, continue, Stefan and Peter.
Yeah, Peter, that's right down the lines where I went through, and I had that exact awakening. That's why I can really relate to this, of AA was not working. And, you know, it works for people. It works if you work, if they say, but guess what? The 12th step was this spiritual awakening. And I was doing 11 steps all the time trying to go through this. And one day from a DUI 4 years ago, I woke up and had that spiritual awakening. And I had to make that shift. And that's really good that you do this with the convergence healing that you go through, is helping people come to grips with it. Because, and also right along the lines that you said, I developed a sugar addiction. So mm-hmm. I was curious to see if you had any examples, or you can talk about maybe some clients that you've helped with different addictions, but other things come up, because we have an addictive personality. I think that would be a good area to touch on.
Sure. You know, addiction is a part of my practice. The primary is just pain, physical, emotional, or spiritual. So I work with people who have all kinds of pains, from broken hearts to tumors. And, you know, I find as far as tumors go, there's a commonality that there's something that generally happens between 6 months and 18 months of diagnosis, that there's something that's going on for that person. There's a broken heart. There's a lost job, a lost income, something that has happened that the person hasn't emotionally processed. And they shove it down. They don't deal with it. They, you know, don't feel safe maybe in dealing with it. And they, that thing gets pushed into their body, and then the body has to deal with it. And I see the same thing with addictive responses. Addiction, again, is how I see a primary response to something that the person couldn't digest. Maybe it was an abuse. Maybe it was a taunting, a bullying. Maybe it was a shaming. Maybe it was a sense of feeling inferior or whatever it is. But these abuses or these traumas, they then get stuck inside of us. We shove them down into our bodies. They turn into anxieties, and those anxieties then drive us because we can't handle the experience of the anxiety. So we have to medicate it. It could be a phobia, a fear. With addiction, I've had, my little miracle story with addiction is I had a guy come to me who had done a lot of spiritual work. So this is why it became more of a miracle. He had been drinking nonstop for a long time. His drinking had been motivated by an experience of feeling humiliated. So he was humiliated as a young child in front of a small schoolhouse, basically in front of all of his peers, as well as people older and younger than him, because it was a single-room school. So the whole community and all the kids in the community witnessed him and humiliated him. The teacher made fun of him. The teacher did some pretty horrible things to him. And his job was to be in front of people. His job was as a spokesman. So as an adult, his job was to be in front of people. And every time that he chose to do this type of work, he had to drink in order to survive. So his heart was in this work. He loved doing this type of journalistic type of work, but he couldn't do it without drinking because he had to suppress all of those anxiety-like experiences. When we were able to go back and say, okay, where are these coming from? Where is this experience coming from? Something he wasn't even really aware of. We were able to pinpoint that experience, let the anxiety and trauma of that experience pass instead of staying stuck inside of him. He'd be carrying it around his whole life. And suddenly the drinking was no longer needed because the trauma experience had been cleared. So after one session, he no longer was drinking. After 30 days, he picked up a drink. He actually drank half of it, put it down, called me. We did another session. And ever since then, as far as I know, he's never drank again. So it's a pretty cool thing when you can actually look at what's motivating the pain, what's keeping it alive inside of us. You know, I call these traumas ghosts. And I define trauma as a ghost, very different from typical psychotherapy. Trauma is a ghost that thinks it's still alive. So it's an experience. It doesn't matter how long ago it happened, whether it was 5 minutes ago or 50 years ago. It's an experience that got stuck within our bodies. We feel it. It's that person that we were engaged in a relationship 20 years ago. We haven't thought about them in years. Suddenly their name comes up and our heart starts to race. We get hot and flushed, or we get shaky and nervous, and that's that experience. That's the ghost, that anger around that experience and how it physically is in that heart racing is stuck inside that individual. And so you've got to teach these ghosts to find their way back home instead of being medicated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that ghost analogy is exactly what I went through. It's so right on the money. And to our listeners again, I'm here with Bobby Elias. This is Stefan Rudolph on Let's Create a Better World. And we have Peter Bedard. We're interviewing, talking to him about that. And what you're saying is the exact pinpoint where this ghost comes up. And in AA, they call it the monkey or the, doing push-ups, like the devil doing push-ups on your shoulder waiting for you.
Sure.
Or some people call it the monkey just bothering you, talking to you all the time. But that ghost is the analogy I use because I see that ghost sometimes. And I feel it, but then I acknowledge it, and I just say thank you for being there. Instead of fighting it, Mother Teresa always had a great quote of what you resist persists. Mm-hmm. And that's the exact analogy of what you do for people is stop resisting it, right? Acknowledge it.
Well, I would go even further with it. So I would go to the point of not only not resisting it, but being curious about it, knowing how that ghost lives in our bodies. You know, how our brains work is that we understand the world, whether we're conscious of how we understand it or not. We understand the world through temperature and texture and color and sound and smell and taste and just a sensory sort of overall experience. So if you were to look back at a trauma, you may have a particular experience that was traumatic to you. You may feel a particular thing, but most of us don't become conscious of how we are in that experience of that ghost coming back to live. So what we need to do is teach it. If the ghost exists as a heaviness in your heart or a stabbing in your back, or it has the feeling of a heat or the color of it is red, or you were molested in a barn and it smells like moldy hay, whatever it is, or my alcoholics, you know, they'll know the color, the temperature, the texture, the sound, the smell of their misery. They'll know it. When you stop and actually ask them to think about it and become aware of it, it's probably cold or heavy, maybe hot. It smells like vomit or sawdust or something like that, or stale beer. There's a taste to it. And that's how the body is holding on to that ghost. So when you can teach that ghost, it's not just about recognizing it, because that's where AA stops. Once you recognize it, you have to be aware of how it exists, and then you have to teach it to find its way back in history. Unfortunately, most people stop before that. They don't become fully aware of how it's been living in their lives. They just are aware of it, and then they say, oh, you need to go away now, which is great and can be effective, but generally it's not really dealing with the full problem. So on a neurological level, you have to teach the experience to find its way back in history, and then recognize it, teach it to find its way back in history, and then bring in a new experience. Because if you create a vacuum, then you create a sense of continuing the anxiety. So then you have to bring in a new experience. So if it was hot and red, maybe you bring something in cool and blue. And you let your psyche and your body understand that experience just like it understood that heat. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it really does. And to our listeners, once again, it's Tito Bedard. And with Bobby Elias, I'm here as Stefan Rudolph. And Bobby, do you have any questions or comments here for Peter?
Yeah, I was just going to reintroduce him, but you just did it. Good job. The conversation is going great. Yeah, I wanted to see, as soon as you're finished with this subject matter, one of the subject matters that Stefan and I talk about, and we've had on this show quite a bit, is the power of your thoughts. And you've delved into this quite a bit. I like your information on it. I'd like to see if you could share some of your information, Peter, with our guests about happiness, why it's important to be happy. I've said many times on this show that you take two different men. One man is sick, he's in the head, he's always agitated, he's upset, he's cranky, he's complaining about everything, he's always in a bad mood, and he's going to live by maybe 10 years less than he should, whereas the other guy is going to live 10 years longer because he's happy, at peace, harmony, out with nature, loving family, always positive. There's two differences there, but I'd like your thoughts, Peter, on happiness and the power of thoughts in general. Just go right ahead, please.
Well, happiness is a fantastic subject, and it's extremely important. But I think a lot of people get it wrong, and they create this quote-unquote happy bubble around them, and they miss the full expression of human emotion. So many people are running around trying to maintain their happiness, and so they then eliminate the rest of the world, because the rest of the world is, quite frankly, not all happy. And life and the human experience is not all happy. And so they make their world smaller and smaller and smaller. And so they cut out friends. They stop listening to the news. They cut out relatives or people that disagree with them. And they create this sort of bubble. And they say things like, oh, I can't be friends with that person anymore because they bring me down, and, you know, that type of stuff. And although it's important to actually to be and bring happiness into the world, they're missing out. And there's also an importance to have the full expression of human emotion. So if something is depressing, a lot of people will say, well, I can't depress, I have to be happy. And they cut off the actual full experience of being depressed. Now, we don't want to wallow in depression, but there's something for us to learn in our sadness. And there's something that there's a gift in all of these emotions. It's part of this beautiful experience of being human. Now, choosing happiness is very important. And so creating an experience of being able to say, I am present with my pain. I am aware of my pain. And I am choosing to be happy in that pain. That is a power. And what I encourage people to do, instead of making the world smaller and smaller and smaller and making their space in it smaller, and creating this bubble around themselves, actually learning how to be happy in the chaos of life, learning how to be happy in painful moments of loss and grief and sadness. And so, unfortunately, this pop psychology understanding of the world right now is that we have to be happy at all costs. And yes, that's true, as long as it's not coming at the expense of all of the other emotions that we're here to experience. Does that make sense to you guys?
Big time. And what did you think about that, Bobby?
Well, yeah, that's great. I like it. That's beautiful. But go ahead and continue. But happiness is good. But I would like to hear your thoughts about the power of the mind. For example, Stefan and I are big fans of, helped himself get well through a guy named Nathan Crane, who's really involved in the health movement, a young fellow, and also with Wayne Dyer and Louis Hay. Myself, Louis Hay is one of my favorites, of course. Wayne Dyer is also one. And Eckhart Tolle is another one. But there's so much to the power of thoughts and how we can take this subject matter. I'd like to get your complete thoughts on more about the power of thoughts and how people can improve their lives with the right kind of thinking as opposed to the bad kind of thinking.
Well, absolutely. The brain is such an amazing, amazing thing, organ, spirit. And the brain can wound, your thoughts can wound, and your thoughts can heal. So it's very important. There's a ratio of 1 to 5. For every negative thought you have, when you have that negative thought, let's say a fearful, judgmental type of thought, a cascade of chemicals is triggered in your body. And those are those painful chemicals, right? Those are chemicals that create stress and anxiety within us. Now, having a contrary thought, say a happy thought, that is great, but it's not going to really do anything to counter that negative thought. You literally have to have 5 positive thoughts for every 1 negative thought to chemically counter the chemicals of the negative thought. And so one of the ways you do that is you engage the full brain. So it's not just a thought, but it's a feeling, a temperature, a texture, a color, a sound, a smell. When you can actually engage in, a thought that's happy, and what is the color of happiness? What is the temperature, the sound, the smell of happiness? What's the taste of your joy? The more you live in those experiences, the more you're creating a chemical soup in your body that is of positivity, that is of feel-good, serotonin, oxytocin, all that type of stuff. And so your brain can wound yourself, your inferiority conflicts, your experience of I'm not good enough, your judgment about your body, all of those types of things can wound your body just as much as a brain that says, I'm beautiful, I'm awesome, I love myself, can heal it. One will bring you down and one will lift you up. So the more you're in that experience of consciously choosing and being curious, okay, well, I'm a little upset I got that ticket. All right, so I got a parking ticket. Great. Okay, so there's a thought. And I'm worried about the money and stuff like that. Okay, now it just is what it is. I can come to terms with it. I can accept it. It's one of the first steps of my process is just acceptance and stepping out of that fog of denial. And then saying, okay, how can I now move forward? I got the ticket. Now what am I going to do about it? What would it be like to actually live in an experience of acceptance? Now, once I'm in that experience of acceptance, can I move beyond into an experience of happiness? For example, on an extreme level, I am thrilled. I am so happy, as strange as this might sound, that somebody killed me those many years ago. Because I am thrilled that that happened to me, because I have become such an amazing person. That pain has taught me so much. That pain has made it so I got to write my book and get published by one of the top 5 publishers in the world. That pain has helped me be a therapist and help others find their happiness. That pain led me to be on your show. And so I am so grateful for that experience that I wouldn't change it. I've had people with tumors and stuff tell me that on their deathbed, that they're so happy for these experiences because they taught them how to be amazing people. They taught them how to live. And when we embrace those types of things, then we truly, really are living, and we're living fully.
Yeah, more and more this shift is going on, Dad. Well, to our listeners as well, it's Peter Bedard. My name is Stefan Rudolph with Bobby Elias on Let's Create a Better World. Peter, more and more that we are doing this, when that happened to me in my DUI and I was in jail, I started saying thank you. And I learned that from Wayne Dyer and other authors. And at first it was sarcasm, but it was, you know, F that, I hated life. And I finally just said, I'm turning these to thank yous. And this is what I need to be thankful for, that I'm healthy. I'm here. I'm still alive. And from that shift on, everything I did became happy. And what you're saying hits home, because we as a society have to be thankful and have an attitude of gratitude, it's called, toward being healthy, toward being able to function and just be out there in the world. And even if we go through the worst things, I've been through surgeries in other areas, I really started saying thank you, because every breath, you know, it should be taken with gratitude and a smile, and just be, have that attitude of gratitude toward life in general. So this is awesome. Yes. That you are having this book and helping others.
And when we become grateful for our pain, then the pain gets to go away. When we become pain grateful for it, say, okay, what do you need to teach me? You know, I was at a conference the other day, and somebody was talking about a man who had been wronged, and he had lost a lot of money, a few million dollars, and it was stolen by his best friend. And he had vowed that he would never rest until he got vengeance upon that friend. And that's an interesting thing, because he was sending a message in his body, in his brain, that he was never going to rest. And a couple years after that experience, he was diagnosed with severe high blood pressure, adrenal fatigue, in major insomnia, all that type of stuff. That vengeance that he was trying to take out on that person who wronged him was actually all being internalized. And so all of that pain that he meant for someone else was actually being inflicted upon himself. And when he started to say, find peace with that and find forgiveness in the person who wronged him, all of his medical conditions reversed.
Yeah, that's all you focused on is the, you know, revenge. And that's all that'll end your life. And I've seen that with people in my life. They just have to get people back. That's all their life is about. And even if you got that, even if he got back, what's going to happen, right? He's going to be like, now what?
Right. Right. And so that gratitude.
Peter, I'd like, this is Bobby Elias, host of the Let's Create a Better World, along with co-host Stefan Rudolph with Peter Bethard. Peter, affirmations. Let me say something about that, and I'd like to get your thoughts on that and anything else you can say. Not just affirmation, but gratitude. For example, let's go to gratitude first. I wake up in the morning and I'm just grateful I'm alive. I'm grateful that I have a bed and a place to eat. I have a lot of the essentials that many people in the world don't have. And then affirmations are really good, because what I say to myself is, I am great. And Muhammad Ali kept saying, I'm the greatest. A friend of mine that knew him very well said he really believed that. And, you know, so I get up and I say to myself, I can do anything I want to do. I really believe that. And I tell myself I'm so-and-so years old, younger than what I really am. And I really believe it. I've gotten better and better at that. And I'm grateful when there's a problem, like you said a while ago. So take us into being grateful and also affirmations, if you could, please.
Well, I love affirmations. Affirmations of gratitude are fantastic. And affirmations of who you are and your truth in the world, like what you said about Muhammad Ali. So affirmations are very interesting. They're kind of like that experience of The Secret that was very popular for years, where it was, oh, you just think it, and it will come. Well, affirmations have to go beyond just thinking it. You could put little post-it notes around the house of, that say, I am wonderful, and you could read them out loud, and you could say, I'm wonderful, I'm amazing, and I'm so cool, and I'm abundant, and I'm prosperous, or whatever. If an affirmation is only done on a mental level, it won't work. If it does, it will be very weak, and it could be reversed very quickly. So an affirmation must be done on all levels. It must be felt physically. And again, this is where I get back into using the brain more and all the sensory parts of the brain. So if you can have an affirmation that says, I'm the greatest, like maybe Muhammad Ali, I bet that he had a feeling about that experience. I bet there was a temperature and a color and a smell and a sound of that experience. So as you say an affirmation, whether it's maybe I'm healthy and abundant, well, you got to know what healthy and abundant looks like. You got to see it. You got to smell it. You got to taste it. You got to feel it deep within your body and yourself. The more you can allow yourself to actually feel that affirmation, the more you can allow yourself to have a temperature and a texture, a color, a sound to it, the more powerful the affirmation will be. And that will really create, or as like pop culture says, manifest, that will manifest that experience rapidly into your life. Because you're involving your entire body, you're involving your mind, so your feelings, your physical self, your mind, and your spirit gets excited about it. So I am excited about being an author and how cool that is, and it feels really good to be able to help people. And the color of it is this bright yellow because it's like a light that's shining into the world. And the texture of it is smooth because there's this ease that has come into my life as people learn about more and more what I do. And do you see how I'm engaging all of these parts of me in this particular affirmation of being healthy and wealthy? Does that make sense?
Yeah, big time. And that's what your master's, you have an MA in consciousness studies. And so I just was looking over your bio, and I completely relate to that. I love that. And the hypnotherapy, too, that you do, it really has to not only be seen. And what you said about The Secret, that was a life-changing movie and book for me 10 years ago. And I ended up working with John Assaraf as well. And that, when I started, you know, doing this over and over, it wasn't just saying, well, I want to be rich, or I want a house, or it has to be felt, seen, smelled, everything, all the senses, right?
Yeah. And the same goes with healing. So back to our audience, if there's anybody out there that is physically feeling pain and you want to jump out of that pain, yes, there's a physical component of pain. Yes, there's an emotional, mental component of pain, and there's a spiritual component of pain. If you want to deal with that mental portion of it, start teaching yourself a different experience. This is what I do with my alcoholics, too. They know what their sobriety loop looks like. And normally it's based on, I can't drink anymore. Well, now I can't drink anymore. The root of that is to drink. It's like saying, don't think about pink elephants. The root of that is to think about pink elephants. So if we're going to jump out of that sobriety loop, who are you as happy, joyous, and free, to take a phrase from AA, instead of who are you as a sober alcoholic, which means you always have to be an alcoholic, who are you as someone who's happy, joyous, and free? And the same goes with pain. Who are you not as being pain-free? You know, I can't stand it when people say they are a survivor. That if you're going to be a survivor, then you have to have something to continue to survive from. So that pain, that tumor, that whatever, has to always be in the background. And I'd rather have you be a thriver. So who are you as a thriver? What does it look like? What does it sound like? What does it sound like in your voice? What type of languaging do you use when you speak of that experience of being a thriver, of being happy, joyous, and free? What is it in the knowing of that experience, the temperature, the texture, color, sound, and smell? And I've seen people, you know, I had a woman who was an addict, and she became an addict because of this physical pain she was experiencing. And the physical pain, she was prescribed addictive drugs from her doctors that she didn't know were addictive. And that physical pain was a result of several people dying within 6 months in her life. And so once we were able to rewind all of those issues, literally in one session, she went from a scale of 0 to 10, she went from a 10 when she walked in the door to a 0 in 45 minutes with me. And wow. It was go ahead, I'm sorry.
Gentlemen, Peter, you can give a final thought, but I'd like you to give your contact information because we've got to wrap this up. Stefan and I are going to go over a couple things as we finish up our last few minutes here. Give your contact information and just half a minute final thought for our listeners, to a motivational thing, how they And we're going to definitely tell people to check your information. But give us your contact information and one more quick half minute of something you want to say, please.
Well, Bobby, thank you so much for helping me share my passion and my work. I so appreciate that. People can find me online all over the place. They can find me on Facebook and Instagram. They can find me on my website. So if they go on Facebook or Instagram, they could look up Convergence Healing, and they could just type that in, Convergence Healing, Convergence Healing. They can go to convergencehealing.com. They can go to my tea shop, where I have healthy holistic teas to help people also heal, at convergencehealingteas.com. And my main point today is just to ask people to step in their own strength, to acknowledge the pain, to actually make the pain your best friend, to develop a relationship with it, to give it love instead of anger, and to actually start creating a new experience when you say, okay, I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I want that affirmation. I am that experience. If you're going to be that experience, then you need to understand it in all parts of you, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So I am that love, and it feels like a golden light. The texture is sparkly and smooth. The temperature is warm. The taste is sweet. And the more you know those experiences and you bring those into your life consciously, physically, and mentally, the more they will be in the world. Your pain will just simply either become something that's just a side note or completely disappear.
That's super. Well, listen, thank you so much for being on the show. And Stefan and I have a few things we're going to do here. But we hope to stay in touch with you because you and I talked about getting together. And also, Stefan definitely wants to somehow work with you on a few things. So thank you again very much. Excellent show. A lot of great information. I like what you just said now about if you have pain, learn to love it. Give it love. That's beautiful. You're fantastic. Thank you.
So great to see you guys, talk to you guys. Thanks. I so much appreciate it.
All right. Okay, thanks, very good. Stefan, this is really good. We've only got a couple minutes, so just real quick, if you give me one minute of your final thoughts on the show today and about this gentleman, Peter Picard, and then I want to make a couple announcements and wrap up the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, once again, what Peter said would really hit home, and I hope it applies to all the listeners out there who are jumping in here to get some affirmations, some confirmations of what affirmations do, some positive thinking, and I just cannot express enough how it is exactly related to what I went through with epilepsy, with alcohol, with all the problems in my life that I had and that we all have in life. We have to be able to change our thoughts in order to change our life. What we think about, we bring about, and we have to just focus on a shift and start being thankful. Whether you get a speeding ticket, whether you know, you get in a fight, something happens in your life that is negative, the more you focus on that and his point about revenge and trying to get back at people, that is our ego taking over. The ego is edging God out, and that's something that we really need to focus on being aware and to grow in that area.
Well, well said. Extremely well said, Stefan. And that's why I thought it would be best for you to set this up, do the research on this gentleman, Peter, and run the show today. You did a great job, and because it's a subject really deep in your life, what you've been through, and this is why you're on the show here, and this is why we have people like him. So thanks so much. I'm going to start thanking everybody, starting with you, Stefan. Thank you for a great job today, and setting this up with Peter, and great job. We'll be talking again real soon to set up the next show. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And let me thank some more people. I want to thank Jesse, our Progressive Radio Network director in New York City. And that's where we're calling now. We're calling we're on our phone. We're on the phone with the show. We're on every week on this show, Pacific time. That's for our LA and West Coast listeners. And 7 o'clock Pacific. So, I want to thank, also Stuart Hassel, our Los Angeles producer here on Progressive Radio Network. I want to thank our social producer, Lydia. I want to thank our guest today again, Peter Bethard. I want to thank especially all our wonderful listeners. I want to thank them. And I just want to say next week's show will be with Burton Goldberg, all about the fact that more and more people are dying of cancer. It's getting worse, as well as other diseases. He's a pioneer in health, in teaching people alternative health and holistic health. Then the week after, November 7th, we'll have Ellie Lax talk about solutions for the world and how love with animals and children. We're going to really get into love and ideas on how we can make this a better world with Ellie Lax. Thank you all very much, especially you listeners. Thank you for coming in. We're honored to have you.